And welcome, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We're excited that you're joining the broadcast today for another exciting episode for Conversations That Matter. On today, we have a very special guest, Annette Owens-Scarborough. She is the program manager for the NIH Small Business Program Office. And Dr. David Hall, the president of the University of the Virgin Islands. And today, we're going to be talking about the mission of NIH's Path to Excellence in the Initiative. And we're going to be talking about all the wonderful things that they're doing there, including a special invite to HBCUs and businesses to apply for the Path to Excellence in Innovation Initiative 2.0, and profiling the great work of the university happening down the University of Virgin Islands with Dr. and David Hall, and why he feels that HBCUs can benefit from being a part of the PEI initiative. Ms. Scarborough, a program manager at NIH, Small Business Program Office, and Dr. Hall, president, University of Virgin Islands, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Let's start with you, Ms. Scarborough. You're the program manager there with the NIH Small Business Program Office. Let's talk about the mission of the NIH Path to Excellence and Innovation Initiative.
Good afternoon, everyone. And thank you again for having us here, Mr. Ray. We appreciate this opportunity to share with all of our HBCUs here in the United States and even abroad, if there are some schools and students that are abroad, the fact that the importance of having HBCUs participate in government contracts and grants, in accordance with the executive order that was signed by President Trump. But we're looking and we're hoping and we're strongly encouraged by the new administration and how they're going to broaden the executive order and our access to HBCUs and federal contracts and grants. The mission of the National Institutes of Health. Everybody has heard of the National Institutes of Health this last year from Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is head of the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases, and what NIH has to bring to the nation. It is the world-renowned biomedical research institute for finding healthcare activities. There are 27 institutes and centers at NIH. And each and every one of those institutes and centers are associated with some medical diseases. We have the Heart Institute, arthritis, alcoholism, drug abuse, mental health, anything that you can think of. For instance, there are autoimmune diseases out here. You heard of Dr. Fauci being involved with the AIDS research with the SARS and with Ebola. We were the ones that the NIH's hospital that was able to assist in the cure with that nurse. Anything that you can think of medically, any unknown disease, anything that's unique, it can be researched. It is being researched at the NIH. The NIH is a part of the World Health Organization. Dr. Fauci is known worldwide. So that is what the NIH is. It's like I said, it's a 27 institute and center. Now, when you talk about contracts, for FY19, we funded approximately $6 billion, and that's with a B, in acquisitions only. That didn't include our grants. That was only contracts.
Right. And
recently, right now, our proposed budget expenditure for FY20 is above $7 billion. And a lot of that money was COVID money. But nevertheless, that was acquisition dollars that went out for contracts at the National Institutes of Health. I mean, the NIH was started in 1887 in a little research lab in New York. And the land where it sits now in Bethesda, Maryland, was donated by the Wilson family. And so that's where the home headquarter base is at the Bethesda Central. But we have offices in Montana. We have institutes in Baltimore at Johns Hopkins, as well as the National Institute of Allergies, Environmental Health Services in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina.
Wow, that's pretty comprehensive as a lot there. And overall, and looking at the information that you had a chance to send to me, I understand that the NIH guys invested more than $32 billion a year to improve human life and reduce sickness and disability. Just to give a folk kind of the scope of the kinds of the budget that you have and the things you're trying to get done. And again, today, we are excited that you all are here so we can talk about the increasing contract opportunities for HBCUs. And I understand that they're going to continue to be a priority for NIH as we go into 2021. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. The National Institutes of Health is Diane Fraser, who is the head of contracting activities for NIH. This lady is extremely important. Anything you can think about that is logistics and contract related, Ms. Fraser is in charge of that. She oversees this enormous budget. The NIH is one of 10 operating divisions, as they call it, under HHS. And HHS is the largest funded civilian agency outside of DOD. Now, saying that, Ms. Fraser decided about 5 years ago that she recognized that there was some not equity among her funding going to HBCUs. So she decided that we were going to start this Profit Excellence and Innovation Program. She is the only head of contracted activity within NIH that has a program that is as broad as this one. This program has been recognized by the White House Initiative on HBCUs. We won the chairmanship award in 19, and we have been deemed the model federal agency for establishing a program to look at the inequities of HBCU receiving funding in federal agencies.
That's pretty incredible. You got NIH as the model agency. That says a lot. Now, right before we bring Dr. Hall in here to talk about University of Virgin Islands and all and why they're involved, just want to, again, give you an opportunity to talk to us again by why exactly was the Path to Excellence and Innovation Initiative, why that was created again. Just kind of some more emphasis upon that, the reason why it was actually created.
Well, it was, as I said, Ms. Fraser noticed in her funding that there was not any HBCUs that were receiving government contracts. She didn't understand why, because you have all of these medical schools like Morehouse, like Howard, Hampton, UVI, John, that have medical opportunities and facilities that could assist NIH in government contracting. Right. And she wanted, that was my task, to reach out, to find out, and to establish a pilot program as to why and what we could do to bring them into the circle to compete with the people like Johns Hopkins, the Duke Universities. And the fact that we have, and I can give this example before we go to Dr. Hall. When I was a contract specialist and we were reviewing, I was working with one of the small business specialists, and we were reviewing subcontracting plans for a major requirement in the National Institute of Child Health. I have to tell you, Mr. Ray, it was very insightful. There were 19 universities that I had no idea even existed. And the young lady, the specialist, Courtney Carter, and I looked at that. There was not one HBCU on this task order. And that was a telling story right there. Why? What was it? Why wasn't the HBCUs responding to NIH's acquisitions? Why weren't they responding to solicitations? Why weren't they coming after these fundings to assist them build their capacity financially for the schools? So that is one reason why
the PEI
was established.
Exactly. And that brings us right here to Dr. Hall. You guys are a part of the pilot program there at University of the Virgin Islands. Dr. Hall, congratulations with that. Matter of fact, it was the first time that I met you was several years ago at an NIH meeting. You may recall that. And that was just after the hurricane had come through, and you still somehow pushed through and made it to Washington to come to that meeting. But again, Dr. Hall, I'm president of the University of the Virgin Islands. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you on board here. Your university has been involved with the pilot program. And just walk us through, sort of, if you would, sir, the decision-making processes that UVI used to determine whether or not you wanted to be a part of the PEI initiative, and describe to us what that's been like working with a business partner and with them for this whole program.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and thank you, Ms. Scarborough, for your words and background. For us, it was a very easy decision to make. Number one, as she indicated, NIH is the premier federal agency that has a mission that goes to the heart and soul of trying to make this nation healthier and more resilient in dealing with various diseases and challenges in the healthcare area. The University of the Virgin Islands was very familiar with the agency. We had received major grants in the area of health. We had a center that focused on health disparities. We had received other grants to support students in the area of healthcare. But we were not familiar with the grant, I mean, with the contract component.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we saw this as an opportunity to expand what we were doing with not just this federal agency, but all federal agencies. We also had another major incentive is that at the time this program was being launched, we were in the early stages of developing a medical school here at the Virgin Islands, and we're still working on that project. And we just felt that there would be enormous synergy between what we were trying to do with the development of the medical school and the mandate and mission of NIH. When we looked at the other pilot HBCUs that were going to be a part of this, it was not only an impressive group of institutions, but some of those institutions had medical schools. So we felt that being a part of the pilot group would allow us to learn more about this transformative project that we were engaged in. The point you made was very critical because having to have a small business partner was something that we had talked about and certainly had worked with companies around various projects. But this process really forced us to go ahead and enter into a relationship with a small business partner. Omni Systems, which is located in the Washington, D.C. area, became our partner. That was fortunate for us because the founders and owners of that company were UVI alums. So it made it even more exciting for us to now work with a couple of our graduates who were very successful business persons to begin to engage in the whole contracting world. So being a part of the pilot program has exposed us to so much about the world of contracting. We've attended a number of programs, seminars, trainings that NIH has sponsored. It has made us have to make some internal changes. As I indicated before, we have been very strong in obtaining research grants at the university. For our size, we really outpace a lot of institutions in obtaining research grants. And we have a very strong infrastructure to support that. However, we had no infrastructure in regards to contracting. And it became clear from our conversations with the NIH and the members of this initiative that we needed to build ourselves up in that area if we were going to be successful. So we now have a full-time contracts manager who looks for opportunities, help us to pursue those opportunities. One of the other projects we had to do was to develop a capability statement, which indicated what our expertise and strength are as we pursue these particular opportunities. So it has been a very enriching experience for us. We believe that we are poised to begin to be a player in the contracting arena, as we have been a player in the grants arena. And as we think about HBCUs and our future, if we are going to not only survive and grow, we have to diversify our revenue sources. We have to be more relevant to the challenges that the society is facing. And it's very fortunate that we have the support of federal agencies like NIH to help us make that transition.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you're just joining us, you're tuned into our episode of Conversations That Matter. And today we're blessed to have joining us for the broadcast, Ms. Annette Owen-Scarborough. She's a program manager at NIH Small Business Program Office, and Dr. David Hall, president, University of the Virgin Islands. And we're talking about the NIH Path to Excellence and Innovation Initiative. Welcome to the show, you all. Now, picking up right here, now, Dr. Hall, you took time to talk about moving and evolving from doing this, having grants, but pursuing contracts, and how I'm blessed you've been really with NIH and the PI program. Just talk about, if you would please, the difference between a contract and a grant, and how the PEI initiative has helped UVI pursue government contracts. And also, what did you learn or achieve by participating in the NIH PEI pilot program?
Yeah. Well, the major difference is that when a university is pursuing a grant, we are in essence indicating that there is specific research that we want to do at our institution that we think will help our faculty members to make a contribution to whatever evolving field that exists, especially in critical research areas. When we are pursuing a contract, we are in essence saying, or the agency is in essence saying, there is some work we need done. And do you have the capabilities to carry out that particular work? And that is a very different mandate. Researchers are, in essence, trying to decide what it is they want to do, certainly within the broad contours of what the agency focuses on. And it's also something that is related to that individual. If that researcher decides to go to another university because they have another position, then in many instances, not in all, they can take that research grant with them, because the agency is more concerned with them finishing the research project in the way that it was outlined. When you're engaged in a contract, we as an institution have a deliverable that we have That's to right. provide to the agency. And so if the persons we've identified to work with us leave the institution and go someplace else, we have to still deliver on right. that contract. And thus that means we are responsible for making sure it is fulfilled. So that is a major distinction. And as I indicated, we have become very familiar with the grant world and have been very successful, but this was a different orientation for us. And so it's like learning how a different organism operates and making sure you can function effectively in that other organism. What it also did is make us, I mentioned that we have a kind of standard small business partner, but it also made us more open to other opportunities to partner with entities. And so with the COVID pandemic and all of the challenges it has created for educational institutions in trying to keep your employees and your students safe, through this process and through our small business partner, we became aware of another company that was developing a machine called SafePass, which in in essence, detects when a person is coming into a building, whether they are wearing a mask. It takes their temperature. It also provides some sanitation to them and disinfects the individual that they're coming into the environment free of things that can contaminate the environment. So we have a few of those machines on our campus now. We plan working with the company to do research in regards to the impact and effects of this type of innovative development. And I would argue that if we had not been a part of this program, we probably would not have come across the company or even been open to these types of partnerships. So it raised our consciousness, and I think it has better prepared us for opportunities in the future.
Wow, that's awesome. I thank you for taking time to elaborate on that and give us information regarding why you wanted to be a part of the initiative and what you've gathered and learned from that. And it seems as if you guys are having great success with that, and that's what it's really all about. Ms. Scarborough, take some time here. We were just talking about, again, contracts, grants, and what have you. Why should HBCUs pursue government contracts? If you will, what are some of the benefits and advantages that they may be able to experience in doing so?
For me, being a former contracting official and now being in this contract, small business and HBCU initiative, it is a sustainable revenue stream. And it can be a revolving one, meaning in contracts, you can recompete time and time again. And in some instances, if you perform successfully, you can maintain that contract for years. Federal contracts can create jobs on campus, stimulating the economy in the local areas and employment for opportunities for students and even outside folks that they may need to bring in to help sustain us out the hall, complete and fulfill that deliverable for a contract. And depending on the type of contract that's awarded, additional student and faculty research opportunities may be contributing to the academic prestige, like a Johns Hopkins, like a Duke University, and so on and so on. We have public universities that receive about 43% of their revenues from grants, federal contracts, and appropriations to assist their growth, in endowments. Whereas HBCUs only receive about approximately 1%.
1%. Oh
my 1%. God. And in some instances, less than 1%.
Less than that. Oh my God.
Private gifts, contracts, grants make up a small percentage of overall revenue for private HBCUs, such as Howard University. Counterparts, 17% versus 25%. So both public. Right. So with both public and private sector HBCU endowments, they lag behind what some of the non-HBCUs by at least 70%.
Wow.
And this gap can jeopardize buffer and sustain these HBCUs. As you know, in the last decade or so, we've lost a lot of historic HBCUs because they couldn't sustain on tuition only.
That's right. That's correct.
So this is why it's important. And government contracts, you know, as I said, there's many ways that HBCUs can participate. They can be the prime contractor. They can be a subcontractor. They can be a teaming partner, as Dr. Hall said, you know, and they're not restricted to one uniqueness about our pilot program was the fact that they had teaming partners with small businesses that were established that could mentor the internal HBCUs once they build their infrastructure. And I do give all kudos to Dr. Hall and UVI for recognizing the fact that they had to build an infrastructure for the contract procurement phase for their university to move forward.
Yeah, again, in an effort to move forward and build upon the executive order issued back in 2017, of course, NIH made a commitment to the increasing the contract opportunities for HBCUs in 2021. Now, the pilot program has ended, and you've made several enhancements to the program, and now you're recruiting HBCUs and business partners for PEI 2.0. Take a moment to elaborate upon how will the new program you're about to launch be different from the pilot program?
Well, Mr. Ray, if I may, and Dr. Hall, I want to first give kudos and thank you to our pilot school participants that hung in there with us to help us build up the 2.0 to see what we needed to do to enhance it. And that was Hampton University, Howard University, Jackson State University, Morehouse School of Medicine, Meharry Medical School, Medical College, and of course, the University of the Virgin Islands. So first, let me say thank yous and extend my appreciation for all that we learned as well working with them. Well, you asked a question about our 2.0 program. Well, I'm proud to say that we currently have an application out there online that opened up on the 15th of January and it will close on February the 12th. We have an independent committee that has been pulled together of scientists, acquisition officials, and actually the actual program officials that are going to review the applications and make recommendations to us to onboard not only additional HBCUs. We're hoping that all of our pilot schools will apply and come back and participate in the 2.0. The 2.0 is our next step. We have developed a database that has been approved by the Office of Budget and Management, the only database, the only HBCU activity that's been approved in the federal government thus far. That database has been established so that the HBCUs will have direct access to opportunities and grants. They will be able to select business partners. They don't necessarily have to maintain a relationship with the same business partner. As they see opportunities and capabilities, they can then merge and select other business partners. We're in the process of enhancing our relationship with other federal agencies, such as the Small Business Administration, the Department of Commerce, MBDA, that have business relationships. We are also in the process of launching our Technical Assistance Center. Now, that Technical Assistance Center is going to be so essential because we will have subject matter experts on board to assist the HBCUs when they are responding to solicitation, help them to understand the integral parts of responding, and hopefully they can be successful. So that's where the 2.0, and now, and the other thing that we're hoping to do is to infiltrate the NIH. It is so huge. We're trying to find HBCU alumni that are within NIH that willing to come on board to assist us and find in programmatic activities for HBCUs to participate in.
Wow, what a comprehensive approach. I mean, you guys are indeed the model. And I know Dr. Hall, you just are really excited to, you know, to be a part of the six schools there in the pilot program, and we're moving on, I'm sure, with the 2.0. And this PEI database, what a unique tool that actually will streamline the HBCU's efforts in locating prospective business partners and identifying relevant NIH opportunities and communicating, as you say, with other PEI participants and NIH staff. This is really an incredible, comprehensive approach. I'm really excited about this. Now, what things should an HBCU consider as we wrap this up before applying to be in the program?
The first thing that comes to me is look at your capabilities.
Right.
Be honest with yourself. Look at your capabilities. Research the NIH's website to determine if that's the federal agency you really want to pursue. And try to determine what your capabilities are. And if you feel like you have a match somewhere in one of those 27 institutions and centers, review that application. Make sure you include all the parts and packages that we're requesting. If you have any questions, prior to the deadline for the submission, please submit your questions to the PEI database, because we are there willing and waiting to assist you to make sure that you are successful. Because when we submit these packages over to that committee, that is going to be the eyes and ears that make recommendations to our office.
Gotcha. Now, again, the applications are available now.
Yes, they are. On your
website?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, and you want to give us that URL so folks that are listening right now can jump on there and take a look at that. And I understand that the deadline is February the 12th.
Yes, it is.
Right.
It's the PEI website. And you know what? Because I don't know it offhand. Who else? Let me see. Keandra, are you on the line?
They can jump on that at the PEI website, right?
Just yes, go there. They can.
Yeah. And they're going to, they'll have the link there, and they'll be able to pull up the application. This has been I'm telling you, I am so incredibly impressed. And having you and Dr. Hall on the show today really highlights the great things you're doing. And again, what an incredible opportunity for HBCUs. This PEI database, what an incredible tool to help to streamline the HBCU's efforts again, and just getting involved with the whole thing. Thank you all both so much for taking time to join the broadcast today. Dr. Hall, again, so good to see you each time. Last time I was in Official Washington before COVID-19 hit, we got a chance to see you there. So you're always here and involved, and that's a good thing. Anytime I get a chance to be around the HBCU presidents and chancellors, I've always been blessed to see you, and thank you so much for your leadership and all that you were doing there at the University of Virgin Islands. And again, I've done this Scall Brothers Program Manager, NIH Small Business Program Office. You guys are doing a bang up job. Oh my God, I'm so excited. We're going to disseminate this information across all of our platforms and do all we can to help you promote this so that HBCUs are aware of what's going on, and they'll look you up and sign up and be a part of this incredible initiative, PEI 2.0. Again, thanks a lot for... Yes, go right ahead.
Mr. Ray, I'm sorry. I found the URL. It's okay. PEI@NIH.gov.
There you go. One more time.
PEI@NIH.gov.
Gotcha. And Dr. Hall, is there somebody listening here to say, you know what? I didn't realize that we had an HBCU down at the University of Virgin Islands. I might want to go and study down there or something. How can prospective students find out more about the great things happening down at the University of Virgin Islands?
Well, they can go to our website, which is www.uvi.edu. And there's a admissions page. It's a lot of information about the university. So not only will they find out that there is an HBCU in the beautiful Virgin Islands, but they will find out that we're the only university with a beach and a golf course.
Beautiful, yes.
So they can come down and learn a lot, achieve their educational goals, and do it in a beautiful place and have some fun and relaxation at the same time.
It is a gorgeous campus. Yes.
Absolutely. God bless you all. Again, Ms. Annette Owen Scarborough, Program Manager, NIH Small Business Program Office, and Dr. David Hall, President of the University of Virgin Islands. Thanks again for joining the broadcast today and sharing with us the great things that are happening at the NIH Path to Excellence and Innovation Initiative, PEI 2.0. Until next time, you all take care.